All studying the ways and the practices of Hezbollah, all the liberation movements. Of course, we have witnessed all these important changes, and in accordance with what we view and in accordance with our perspective on Israel's strategy and the incapability of Israel imposing its own solutions, but at the same time, we don't take the challenges lightly. We still are witnessing very difficult challenges, and there are still a lot of obstacles, meaning that we need to make more sacrifices. The march, or the jihadist march, needs more sacrifices, and we need to be vigilant more and more in the nation and in the ummah. And now the choice has become clear. Resistance is the appropriate choice, and now we have become more confident in our God and in our people. And so Hezbollah specifies the general themes of the ideological and political approach of the movement, the political approach concerning the challenges we are witnessing currently. The first chapter, hegemony. First of all, the world and the Western American hegemony. After World War II, the United States of America sought to practice hegemony, sought to be a hegemonic power over the world, and we saw a lot of developments taking place in this plot for America to be the hegemonic power of the world. And America took advantage of the achievements which were made, the many different achievements which were made, and also the educational and technological advancements and military advancements which were made. And we also saw the economic political support for this American movement and the aspirations for hegemonic power. The most dangerous part of Western hegemony and American hegemony is that they consider this hegemony from the very beginning that it owns the world. This hegemony means that they own the world and they have the right to hegemony because they have the upper hand in many different areas. And so the strategy of expanding Western power and especially American power, at the same time, of course, taken side by side with the economic capabilities, this has become a global aim, meaning the aim of hegemony does not, of course, target one region, but targets the whole world, to be practiced hegemony over the whole world. Of course, we also saw how the Americans tried to take advantage and take control of all the important economic institutions, especially the financial institutions. And we also, of course, did see the military support which America gave to many different sides. This American plot for hegemony led to a lot of conflicts. Of course, the most important of these conflicts is the conflict of civilizations and the conflict of cultures. We also are witnessing now the conflict of the rich and poor. The globalization plot, or this whole plot of globalization and capitalism, tried to implement or impose new cultural norms on other societies. And globalization reached the most dangerous level when this globalization became a military globalization. It became this because of the American plot for hegemony, and we saw how this was manifested in our region in the Middle East, beginning with Afghanistan, then to Iraq and to Palestine, and then to Lebanon. Of course, all of these countries did witness military invasions. We saw the military attack against Lebanon in July 2006 by the Israelis. The plan of hegemony, the American plan of hegemony, never reached the unprecedented level it reached very lately, especially during the last decade of the 21st century until today. We saw what happened, the escalation. Of course, we saw what happened after the collapse of the USSR, the Soviet Union. After this period, this provided a chance for the Americans. And the Americans, of course, made their calculations and saw a golden opportunity. And in the name of world responsibility and not differentiating between American interest and world interest, which all meant working and promoting American hegemony as if it was an interest for all people, not just for American people, meaning they're practicing hegemony, but they say this hegemony is good for your sake. We also saw how the neoconservatives came to power in the United States of America with George Bush Jr., George Bush's son. This, of course, neoconservative movement showed its new perspective or showed its vision. And we saw the vision of this Bush administration before Bush even took power. So we read about the plots or the plans of the neocons before George Bush came to power, and it was no surprise that this document by the neocons or by the neoconservatives, which became evidence of the working plan of the Bush administration, it stressed, for example, on rebuilding the American capabilities. And of course, it also reflected a strategic view, a new strategic view of American national security. And it became very clear as well that this American view depends on military capabilities, not as a deterrent force, but military capabilities as a force of intervening, a force for intervention, meaning to intervene and invade countries or to launch preemptive strikes or any other ways, any other means to deal with any conflict which takes place in the world. The Bush administration, after the September 11 attacks, found that it had a very, very good opportunity to practice hegemony at its highest levels. It, of course, laid out a strategy of unilateral hegemony and tried to implement this strategy under the title of a global war on terror. And in this way, the American administration of George Bush tried to take attempts which were considered successful at the beginning. Now, these attempts were based on the following. First of all, it tried to militarize its foreign policy to the highest level. Second of all, it abstained from depending on multilateral politics and took unilateral political strategic decisions and only cooperated in the necessary areas when it was extremely necessary to do so. It also tried to reach a decisive point in the war on Afghanistan in order to take the next most important step in the plot for hegemony, which was to take control of Iraq. So they were in a hurry to finish Afghanistan to go to the important step, which was Iraq, which was the most important part of the new Middle East, which is in agreement with the requirements of the world of the aftermath of September 11. And this American administration always resorted to all types of maneuvering and lies and fabrications to justify its wars, especially the war on Iraq. It also resorted to lies and used these lies against anyone who was against its colonialism. It used these lies against people, against movements, even against countries. And so this administration of George Bush tried to say that terrorism and resistance were the same, put them within the same framework to take away any humanitarian legitimacy from the resistance and hence to justify waging wars, waging different wars on resistance within the perspective of cancelling out any defensive means for people to defend their liberty and to defend their honour and for their right to live in complete sovereignty and for their right to also take their appropriate stances and to play their role in the historic movement of humanity in modern times. Terrorism became an American excuse to practice hegemony by continuing to arrest in a blind manner, continuing to take these unjust measures, and by continuing to practice illegal measures like we are seeing in Guantanamo. We also saw this American administration continuing to intervene in the affairs of other countries and to criminalize other countries and to take accountable measures which target people, peoples of countries. America even gave itself the right to wage destructive wars which do not differentiate between innocent and guilty, between the elderly and children, and between women and youngsters. The cost of the American wars on terror now have cost millions of lives, in addition to the mass destruction, which did not only target infrastructure and homes, it also targeted the structure of societies, society itself, structures of societies were disseminated and dismantled in this process, which brought back civil conflicts which have sectarian roots, which never end. And we must also not forget within this perspective the targeting of the cultural heritage of these countries. There is no doubt that the American terrorism is the source of all terrorism in the world, and the Bush administration transformed the United States of America into a danger to the whole world, a danger to the whole world on all levels. And if we had an opinion poll, held an opinion poll today for the whole world, the United States of America would be shown as the most hated country in the world. The failures of the war on Iraq and the developments of the resistance forces in Iraq and the regional effects of this war and the failure of the so-called war on terrorism, especially in Afghanistan, in addition to a return of the Taliban and a confession to their role and the efforts to make a settlement with the Taliban movement, not to mention the clear American failure on the resistance in Lebanon and Palestine by Israeli means, all of these failures, all of this has led to the American reputation being eaten away. The American reputation of hegemony has been eaten away. The American reputation of being capable of implementing its own resolutions, imposing its own solutions, has been eaten away. But this does not mean the United States of America will now abandon the stage, abandon the arena. On the contrary, America will do whatever it can to protect what it calls its strategic interests. This is because the policies of hegemony, the American policies of hegemony are based on ideology which are fed by extremist movements that are allied with certain military personnel and military institutions. Second of all, our region and the American plan. If the oppressed world is under the mercy of this hegemony, our Arab and Islamic world are being targeted most of all, more than any other region. We are the main targets of this hegemony because of our resources and our geography and our cultural heritage. Our Islamic and Arab world has been subject for centuries to brutal wars which never end, endless brutal wars. But the most developed part of this plot of brutal wars was when the Zionist entity was established in the region. There was a plan or a plot to divide our region. And of course, this plan reached its highest level when the United States of America took the colonialist power role in the region. The central aim of the American hegemony is to take control of the people in all forms, political, economic, and cultural. The American plot is also to take control of the resources of this region, most important of all, the oil resources, because these resources are most important of all to take control of the world economically. Of course, they strive to achieve this plan without any boundaries, meaning they use all means, including military means, outright military power, all-out military power. America, in order to achieve this aim, depended on general policies and strategic working plans. The most important of all are, number one, to provide the highest level of stability for the Zionist entity. The Zionist entity as a base for the American hegemonic conspiracy or plot in the region. They also provided the highest possible support for this entity, and they also gave safety for this entity so that this entity would play a role of a cancerous cell in the region which could exhaust all the energy of the countries of the region, that could also dash away the hopes and aspirations of the countries of the Middle East. Second of all, they tried to take away all of our cultural heritage, all the cultural heritage from our people, and they tried to weaken the morale of our people by waging media and psychological wars. They call it now the soft war, of course. This soft war targets all of the symbols of jihad in our region. Third, they also supported the regimes of oppression in our region. They also held on to the important geographical locations in our region, because these geographical locations are very, very important from land, air and sea, and they also went ahead and built many important military bases. This was in order to serve their wars. The fifth point, they prevented any revolutions from happening in the region, any revolutions which could have strength or could play a historic role in the world. The sixth point, they tried to plant divisions, especially sectarian divisions amongst Muslims, in order to create internal conflicts which never end. It is very clear that there is no chance today to analyze any conflict in any region except from the world strategic perspective. The American danger is not a local danger, or it is not a danger which is related to one region and not another. The battlefront for this American danger must be the whole world, meaning the whole world must respond. The whole world is subject to this danger. To confront this danger is very dangerous, and it is a historic battle. And so this is a battle of generations, and what we need to do is to take advantage of all advantages we have, all the strong points we have. And our experience in Lebanon has showed us that difficulty does not mean impossible. On the contrary, vigilant people and a wise leadership, a vigilant leadership which is ready for all alternatives, for any scenario, and which depends on achievements, can bring about victory and can even achieve victory after victory. And as we saw this possible in history, it is also possible if we look at the geographic level and geostrategic or geopolitical level. The American plot towards our region left us with no choice except resistance. Unfortunately, we cannot view America as a friend. For the sake of a better life, the American hegemony didn't give our nation, our ummah, any choice other than that of resistance for the sake of a better life and for the sake of a better future for our children, our grandchildren, a future of brotherhood, of coexistence, of peace, just like we saw during the days of the prophets, of the great prophets throughout history. This is also one of the priorities of any human being. Any human being strives to achieve this peaceful coexistence and stability. The third chapter, Lebanon. First of all, in Lebanon there are many issues. Number one is the state or the nation. Lebanon is our nation and is the nation of our fathers and our grandfathers. It is also the nation of our children and our grandchildren and of all the future generations. It is the nation which we sacrificed for. We sacrificed for the sake of the sovereignty of this nation. We sacrificed for the sake of liberating the lands of this nation. We want this nation to be for all of the Lebanese. This nation should take in all Lebanese, should include all of the Lebanese. And we want this Lebanon to be a unified Lebanon, unified territories, a unified leadership, unified institutions, and we refuse any type of division or federalism in Lebanon, whether it be indirect or direct federalism. And we want this Lebanon to be a sovereign Lebanon, a secure, stable, capable Lebanon. We want this Lebanon to be capable. We want Lebanon to exist, to be present in the region and to play an important role in the present and in the future, just as it was before throughout history. And one of the most important conditions for establishing a nation with such descriptions is that this state, this Lebanese nation, must have a strong state and a political authority which really represents the will of the people and the aspirations of the people for achieving freedom and security and stability. And this is what all of the Lebanese call for. This is what they all yearn for achieving, us included. I don't want to promise you this is what we want without promising. Second of all, within the same chapter, the resistance. Israel represents a permanent threat to Lebanon, the state and the entity. It represents a threat to Lebanon because Israel has greed greed to the lands of Lebanon and the water of Lebanon. And it also represents a threat to Lebanese coexistence. Lebanese coexistence, which shows a unique picture for everyone. This entity is also a racist entity. In addition, the presence of Lebanon on the borders of occupied Palestine in a region which has witnessed chaos and conflicts because of the wars with the Zionist entity, because of this geographical location, we have certain national responsibilities we must take. First of all, concerning the threat of Israel to this country ever since the Zionist entity was established in the Palestinian occupied territories. This Zionist entity always showed it wanted to take control of Lebanese territories and to make these territories part of its entity, to take control of the resources of Lebanon, especially the water in Lebanon. And Israel tried to achieve this in a step-by-step process. The entity began with its military campaign in 1948 on the border, and it went into the deep into the country to the Hula massacre, the massacre of the Lebanese airport in 1968. Of course, and during those 2 years of 1948 and 1968, during this 20-year period, there were many operations, military operations on the border as well, which targeted to take control, direct control of Lebanese territory and Lebanese resources. There were repeated invasions. We saw what happened also in March 1978 when Israel occupied the border territories and took control of these territories. And this was all part of a complete strategy or complete plot to take control of all of Lebanon. All of this was happening with the complete support of the United States of America. And at the same time, the so-called international community and the international institutions ignored what was going on and were silent. Even the Arabs were silent towards all of this. And there was an absence, at least I can say, an absence of the Lebanese authority, which left its territory and people for the greed of the Israeli occupation without taking its responsibilities, its national responsibilities. In light of all of these national catastrophes, in light of these problems, and the struggles of the Lebanese who were loyal to their country didn't find any way, any other means except resistance based upon their national and religious duty. They had to defend their territories, and so they made the choice to begin with a national popular armed resistance to confront the Zionist danger and the permanent military campaigns which were being launched. Now, at the time of this very, very difficult campaign, or during this very difficult period where the Lebanese authority abandoned the people, we began with the march of retaining our country by armed resistance. Of course, we aimed to liberate our territories and to retain our decision-making in order to rebuild our country and rebuild our constitutional institutions. Most important of all is that we once again rebuilt our national norms, which are the foundations of a country. When I speak about national norms, I speak about the sovereignty and honor, national sovereignty and national honor. And so these were no longer slogans which were hung on the wall. The resistance made these slogans reality, or terms which everyone strived or yearned to achieve. These became the aims to rebuild Lebanon, to rebuild the modern Lebanon. And so resistance, of course, chose Lebanon as a place for historic achievements, and resistance gave Lebanon once again its appropriate stance, its appropriate position. It's an appropriate position whereby everyone will be proud of this country, a country for freedom and culture and diversity, as it is, and as it is also a country for sacrifice and heroics. All of these descriptions were brought about by the resistance because of what we achieved, liberating Lebanon in the year 2000 and the historic victory which we achieved in the year 2006. During these two wars, or after these two wars, after these two achievements, we showed what resistance can achieve. Our acts, or the means and the way the resistance fought, is now being studied by many other institutions, by many world institutions, and by many other freedom movements or liberation movements. Of course, we were able to prevent the enemy from achieving its aims, and we dealt them a serious blow, and also They lost, the entity also was defeated, a historic defeat. Lebanon, its resistance and its army and its people achieved a historic victory which brought about a new era to the region. This new era was the role of the resistance, the role of a resistance in confronting the enemy and providing protection for the nation and to defend all of the people and to complete the liberation of all occupied territories. This role or this job is a very important issue and a permanent duty which must be played. As long as Israel continues to exist and continues to threaten to take control of our resources, and in light of the imbalance of power between the Lebanese state and the Zionist entity, this imbalance of power which normally leads to weak peoples and peoples who are targeted by hegemonic powers, this normally leads the weak people to look for certain ways to take advantage of the capabilities which they possess. Meaning, in light of the imbalance of power between both sides, the permanent Israeli threat imposes on Lebanon to come up with a defensive plan which includes a popular resistance, which contributes in defending the country against any Israeli invasion, and a Lebanese army which also protects the country and also promotes the security and stability of this country. So, of course, as I did say, this is a two-way plan which includes the resistance and the army. Now, this has proven to be successful in our strategy against the enemy. It provided Lebanon with stability and security, and what we're providing here are facts and not slogans. This process which I just explained is the means by which we protect Lebanon. After all other means failed, depending on international resolutions or depending on settlement with the enemy, all of these means have failed. So resistance was the only means which proved to be successful. Resistance enabled us to retain our territories and to also protect our sovereignty and to achieve real independence. And so within this context, all of the Lebanese, all the politicians, all of the cultural and intellectual figures, all of the economic institutions, all must take part in maintaining this scenario, this defensive scenario, which includes resistance and the army, because this scenario is being threatened continuously. And so what we need is the highest level of participation in defending the country and providing the means to defend this country. The success of the resistance in confronting the enemy and the failure of all of the plans or plots to defeat the resistance or to isolate the resistance or disarm the resistance, and the continued Israeli danger or the continuous danger which Israel poses to Lebanon and the continuous threats to Lebanon impose on the resistance or oblige the resistance once again to possess strong points or to best possess advantages and to continue to develop its capabilities, which would help the resistance to play its role and do its national duty to contribute in continuing the mission of liberating the territories which are still under Israeli occupation, the Shab'a Farms, the Farshuba Hills and the Ghajar village, and to also bring back all of our prisoners and the bodies of all of our martyrs, and to also take part in the duty of defense. Third is the state and the political order. The main problem with the Lebanese political system, which prevents any reforms and any development and any modernization of Lebanese politics, is political sectarianism. The sectarian aspect of our politics is a big obstacle towards achieving democracy, because democracy is the way whereby an elected majority can rule and an elected opposition can oppose. In this way, the door can be open for real ruling of a country between a majority and an opposition, a minority opposition. And so for this reason, the most important issue and one of the most important conditions to achieve such a democracy is to cancel out political sectarianism. We must abolish political sectarianism in accordance with the Taif Agreement. A national committee must be formed, assigned with the task of getting rid of political sectarianism. And until the Lebanese are able to do this, of course, the Speaker Nabih spoke about forming such a committee, but until we are able to do this, until we achieve this by a national dialogue, until we can abolish the sectarianism aspect from our political system, and as long as our political system is based upon sectarianism, democratic consensus is the only way to rule Lebanon, because this is the way we can really implement the constitution and also achieve coexistence. Of course, what I read just now was taken from the memorandum of understanding signed between Hezbollah and the Free Patriotic Movement, headed by Michel Aoun. Now, so any ruling of the country between minority and majority must depend on real democracy. And real democracy, as I said, cannot be achieved until we abolish political sectarianism. The will of Lebanese to live side by side and to have coexistence and to have equal rights, this all obliges on us to cooperate for real participation. And real participation is the best way to preserve our diversity. Of course, Lebanon is a country of diversity. The best way to preserve this diversity is to walk on this path. Of course, previously we have witnessed instability which aimed to cancel out certain Lebanese groups or certain Lebanese confessions. Democratic consensus is the best way for real participation until we abolish political sectarianism. So a democratic consensus, once again, is a way to develop our country, and this also contributes to a higher level to opening the doors for a new stage to build a country which people can be confident in. When we build a strong state, people will be confident. This state will work for the sake of them, meaning for the sake of the people. The country which we look forward to building with the rest of the Lebanese is, and this is our perspective, it's the following. A country, I'm not going to say 1, 2, 3, a country which provides liberties, general liberties and freedoms, and provides the appropriate environment for practicing these liberties. A country was also anxious to achieve cohesion, internal cohesion, unity. A capable country which can protect the sovereignty of Lebanon, the people of Lebanon. A country which has a strong army, a strong national army, which possesses capabilities and security institutions which are effective and are really assigned with the duty of protecting the people. Also, a country with developed institutions which cooperate amongst each other, developed institutions which are based upon clear rules and regulations, a country which also abides by upholding the law on all people within the perspective of respecting liberties and justice in serving all of the people, regardless of their religious confession or their political affiliation. A country where we have a clear, suitable, appropriate parliamentary representation. And this can only be achieved with a modern electoral law which allows the Lebanese to elect their representatives without any sectarian or financial motives, which provides the highest and most expanded comprehensive representation for the Lebanese people. A country which also depends on those who have educational capabilities, a country which also appoints those who are honest and credible, regardless of their religious and political affiliation, people who work for the sake of cleansing all administrative bodies from corruption, a country whereby we can see a judicial system, a higher judicial system which is independent and far away from the control of politicians, a judiciary whereby we have noble, credible, honest judges who practice their responsibilities of bringing about equality and justice between people, a country which also bases its economics upon the productive sectors and which works to further improve these sectors, especially the agricultural sector and the manufacturing sector, giving these economic sectors the priority, giving them support, which in the end leads to more production and more growth, and which provides employment opportunities, and which also works on invigorating the agricultural sector. We also strive for a country which wants to bring about equal growth in all different areas, and which tries to cancel out the gaps in growth between different regions, a country which takes care of its people and its citizens and which works for providing services with all the citizens, meaning we are not with a country which works for one group of citizens only, a country which provides medical treatment and which also addresses the problems of poverty and which also provides free education, a country which helps all the future generations and also contributes to guiding these future generations, a country which protects all of our future generations as well from straying onto another path, a country which also works to promote the role of women and to make women play a more important role on the Lebanese arena, a country which can also shed light and improve the educational situation in our country, taking care of public schools and also to take care of the Lebanese public university and to make this university a university of all Lebanese, not as it is labeled now, the university for poor Lebanese, a country which also depends on a decentralized administrative approach which gives administrative authorities to different people regardless of their affiliation, with the aim of promoting the chances of growth and facilitating all issues for all different Lebanese without allowing this decentralization issue to become federalism. Also, a country which works hard to stop immigration from our country, people who migrate, especially those people who are smart, who are talented, who can achieve something for our country. We also strive for a country which takes care of all Lebanese immigrants all over the world, a country which defends these immigrants and which protects these immigrants and takes advantage of these immigrants being outside Lebanon for the sake of serving national interests or national causes. Establishing a state with such descriptions is our aim, and it is also an aim for all honest Lebanese people, for any Lebanese person, and we in Hezbollah will do our utmost side by side with the political and public sector. We will strive in order to achieve this noble national aim. The fourth chapter, Lebanon and the Lebanese-Palestinian relations. What we mean here is Palestinians in Lebanon especially. One of the catastrophic results of the establishment of the Zionist entity in occupied Palestine was the problem of Palestinian refugees who came to Lebanon to live in it temporarily as guests with their Lebanese brothers until they returned to their home, which they were forced to flee. And the Palestinians and the Lebanese together have suffered a lot from the fleeing of the Palestinians and the living of refugees. But the main reason behind all of this suffering was the occupation, Israeli occupation of Palestine. The repercussions of this occupation hurt and dealt a severe blow to all people, not just the Palestinians, all peoples of the region. The sufferings of the Palestinian refugees in Lebanon is not only about the pain of being a refugee and being forced to flee. In addition, the Palestinians were subject to massacres and Israeli military assaults and military campaigns which destroyed the humans and destroyed homes, like what happened in the refugee camp in Nabatiya in South Lebanon. The living conditions in these camps also has deteriorated. Civil rights are not being provided for these refugees, and the consecutive Lebanese governments have not played their role and not done their duty to improve the living conditions of these Palestinian refugees. And so for all these reasons, the Lebanese authorities, the responsible authorities, are obliged to take their responsibility and must build Lebanese-Palestinian relations on suitable foundations. These relations must be based on clear foundations which take into consideration the mutual interests of both people, and these relations must not be subject to change and must not be subject to politics, meaning Lebanese-Palestinian relations must stay firm regardless of any outside intervention or regardless of which politician comes to power. So what we stress on first of all is direct Lebanese-Palestinian dialogue. We must sit down with the Palestinians in Lebanon. We must sit down and talk. We also need the Palestinians in Lebanon to be in agreement, and the Palestinians must be able to choose their own representative, which represents them in this dialogue. They must, of course, abandon any disagreements, internal disagreements, which we are witnessing, for example, in the Palestinian internal dialogue. We must also provide the Palestinians with social and civil rights in Lebanon, which maintains and preserves their identity and their cause. The fourth point, we must hold on to the principle of the right of refugees to return and refuse the naturalization of these refugees. The fifth chapter, Lebanon, the Arab relations. Lebanon has an Arab identity and belongs to the Arab world, and of course, Lebanon believes in its identity, believes in being an Arab country. In addition to this, the geopolitics and the strategic depth and the politics of the region and the national interests of Lebanon, they specify and they actually oblige Lebanon, they oblige and impose on Lebanon to always commit itself to all Arab causes, all righteous Arab causes, most important of all, the Palestinian cause and the Arab-Israeli conflict. There is also a dire necessity to do our best to complete our efforts and address the internal conflicts amongst the Arab world. The disagreements which we see amongst the Arabs do not justify being with one alliance against the other in the Arab world. We must not also take part in the Western plans which aim to promote and deepen internal Arab divisions, as unfortunately some Arab regimes do, because this will lead to serving the Zionist entity. Internal Arab divisions lead to strengthening the Zionist entity and also represents a success for the American plot. Any conflict, any disagreement must be addressed in an appropriate civil manner on a dialogue table. In this way, we can deal responsibly with all national issues, all issues concerning the Arab people, the Arab region. We must provide means to continue to coordinate with each other in order to bring about the highest level of unity which serves our causes. And here, the choice of resistance is a dire necessity, a very, very big necessity to weaken the Zionist entity and to strengthen the Arab stance, regardless of the nature of the strategies or of the political calculations which are being taken. Meaning, even those Arab countries those who support a settlement need resistance. The resistance, of course, says that all Arabs must take advantage of our experience in Lebanon. I'm saying they can take advantage of our resistance in Lebanon, of the experience of our resistance in Lebanon. We have no problem. We want this. As long as the results are in order to weaken the Zionist entity and to weaken the enemy and strengthen the Arab stance, we welcome anyone taking advantage of our resistance and the experience of our resistance in Lebanon. In this context, Syria showed a historic stance in the struggle with Israel and supported the resistance movements in the region and stood side by side with the resistance movements in the most difficult circumstances, and Syria did its best to bring about Arab unity against Israel. And so we stress on the necessity of holding on to the unique relations between Syria and Lebanon. These relations are a political, security, and economic necessity. And there are political, security, and economic mutual interests. And geography even imposes on us to have these unique relations. In this way, we can confront the common challenges. And we also call for putting an end to all of the tension in the relations between both countries, a tension we witnessed in the past few years, and we call for bringing these relations back to the way they were as soon as possible. Now, Lebanon and relations with the Islamic world. Our Arab world and our Islamic world is facing a lot of challenges which target all different people from different forms of life. Political sectarianism, or sectarianism in general, and especially between Sunni and Shia, and the national disagreements, for example, between Kurds and Turkmens and Arabs and Iranians, and trying to terrorize minorities and shedding the blood of the Christians, especially in Palestine and in Iraq, and also the Christians fleeing the Arab world, even in Lebanon. This all badly or adversely affects our country and also adversely affects our aim to stand on our own two feet and be strong and to have a say in the world. Instead of our diversity being used for our advantage, our diversity was used as a way to rip our societies apart, to divide our societies. What we have seen now is that Western policies, especially American policies, and the practices of certain leaders in our countries have come into agreement and has actually served each other, but have not served the region or the Arab countries. So taking these facts into consideration is very necessary, and it is also necessary to specify such issues as a priority. We must address these issues, the issues of minorities, religious minorities, and other national groups. All politicians, all leaders, all of us have a responsibility to address this issue. And Hezbollah also now stresses on the necessity of cooperation between Islamic countries in all different areas. This is what provides cohesion in order to confront the hegemonic policies and the plots of hegemony. This also prevents the cultural invasion from the West and also protects our resources. And within this perspective, Hezbollah considers that Iran, the Islamic Iran, is a central, important country in the Islamic world. And Iran, with its revolution, was able to overthrow the regime of the Shah with his American and Israeli schemes and projects. And the Republic of Iran, Islamic Republic of Iran, stood side by side in support of the Arab and Islamic causes, especially the Palestinian cause. The policy of the Islamic Republic of Iran is very clear and is firm. This policy supports the central and most important issue for Arabs and Muslims, which is the Palestinian issue. Ever since the victory of the Islamic Revolution with the leadership of Imam Khomeini, may peace be upon his soul, and also the opening of the first Palestinian embassy, which replaced the Israeli embassy, ever since this happened, support support continued. The Iranian support for the Palestinian cause continued. This support is now shown and manifested by Imam Khamenei. And this led to many victories which were achieved for the first time in history, in the history of the struggle with the Zionist invaders. The disagreements between Iran and some Arab countries means stabbing oneself and serves only Israel and serves only the United States of America. Iran, which based its policies and built itself, the Islamic Republic, meaning on the centrality of the issue of the Palestinian cause and enmity towards Israel and standing up to American policies and blending in with the Arab and Islamic world and policies, this Iran must be met with brotherhood and cooperation. We must deal with Iran as a brotherly country and as a strategic country, a strategic heavyweight, an independent, liberating country which supports the Arab-Islamic cause, which supports Arab-Islamic independence. And also as a country which increases the people of our region in strength and resistance. Our Islamic world strengthens when we show more cooperation and more coordination, and we stress on the importance of taking advantage of political and economic cooperation, which we are witnessing in all of the Islamic countries in the world. So, coordination must be for the sake of victory and strengthening our countries. Also stress on the unity of Muslims, as God said in His Holy Book, be unified and do not divide. Do not, of course, allow those to divide you. Do not allow the evil to divide you. And so we stress here that the Sunnis and Shia must be unified and must confront all of these conspiracies which are being planned for. The seventh issue, Lebanon and international relations. The conflict in Hezbollah's vision, this is based upon a political and moral basis, first of all, between the oppressor and the oppressed, the hegemonic powers and the oppressed countries, occupying powers and powers or countries who yearn for freedom and liberty. And so Hezbollah says that unilateral hegemony dashes away any or actually gets rid or abolishes stability and security and peace. Unilateral hegemony destroys stability and peace. So the unlimited American support for Israel and America's support for Israel's wars and America's covering up for Israel's occupation of Arab lands and America's hegemony on international institutions and the double standards being practiced in adopting and implementing international resolutions and the policy of intervening and meddling in the societies of other countries and militarizing the world and also waging wars and bringing about conflicts between minorities and majorities in other countries. This all puts the American administration in the perspective of an enemy to all our countries, and this all puts on us a responsibility to confront this approach. Concerning the European policy, this European policy is between incapability on one side and on the other side complete support for American policies. This actually leads to America not being a neutral midway power, a non-aligned power. This makes Europe actually a power which sides with the Americans and Israelis. The Europeans now in this era of failure are side by side with the Americans, and this is a strategic mistake which will lead to more problems in the European and Arab relations. Europe has a special responsibility because of the way colonialism has harmed our region, and the repercussions of this colonialism still exist today, and European people also have a history in fighting occupation and so the moral and humanitarian duty of the Europeans, before it being a political duty, this moral duty obliges on the Europeans to recognize the right of the people to fight the occupants and to differentiate between resistance fighters and terrorism. And according to our perspective, cooperation in Arab-European relations obliges and imposes on the Europeans to begin with a new independent European stance, independent of the Americans and Israelis. And this stance will not be able to be taken without witnessing a transformation in addressing the real malfunctions in the European perspective or European view towards the situation and problems we are witnessing in our region. We, in this perspective, we highly appreciate the Latin American stance against colonialism, and we also view that there are points of agreement between the policies of Latin America and the policies of resistance movements in our region. This means we can build a better international system, a more just international system. This all provides more hope on the level of the world, and this should be based on a unified humanitarian identity and a common national identity, a mutual identity for all of us. And so the slogan of the oppressed will always be an important part of our policies and our understandings and our stances towards all international issues. The last chapter, Palestine and the negotiations for a settlement. First of all, the issue of Palestine, the Zionist entity. The Zionist entity, ever since it took control of Palestinian territories and forced the Palestinians to flee in 1948 with the support of the powers of hegemony at that time, this represented a direct military campaign assault which targeted the whole Arab region and really represented a threat to the security and stability and interest of this Arab region. And the harm it caused was not only to the Palestinian people or to the neighboring people of the Palestinians. The military assaults and the instability and the wars which we witnessed in this region because of the hostile practices of the Israelis or of the Zionists are clear evidence of the oppression and injustice which was done to the Palestinians and to the Arabs and the Muslims because of the crime against humanity which was committed by the West when the West agreed to plant this strange entity in our Arab and Islamic world. This entity was a hostile entity and was represented an extension of the policy of practicing hegemony on the world and especially on the region. The Zionist movement is a racist movement, and so we do not view this movement as a religious movement. It is a racist movement, ideologically and in practice, and it is a result of a hegemony policy, and the main project, the main scheme of this entity is to establish an expanded entity, an expanded state. Of course, they practice massacres and terrorism with the support and with the sponsor of the hegemonic powers, especially the United States of America. Of course, we know that a strategic alliance exists between the USA and Israel, and hence the US is a strategic partner in any Israeli war and any Israeli massacre and any Israeli terrorism. The conflict which we are waging, the conflict which our Ummah is waging against the Zionist colonial entity in Palestine is a duty which is self-defense. It is not an act or an assault on anyone. It is a duty of self-defense against the occupation, against the Israeli military assault, the hegemonic military assault which targets our rights and which targets our future. This is not based upon religious confrontation or racist confrontation from our perspective, meaning our problem with them is not that they're Jewish. Our problem with them is that they are occupants. They took our territories, our sanctuary, our sanctities. Those who sponsored this movement always used religion. Yes, they did use religion and tried to employ religious feelings to achieve their aims. and Bush and Obama and all of the Zionists all called on the Palestinians and the Arabs and Muslims to recognize Israel as a Jewish state. And this demand is clear evidence that they use a religious cover to achieve political aims. The main goal, the end goal, is that the Israelis want to live in this region, but this entity is an entity which cannot continue to exist and will be subject to a collapse, will collapse in the end. And here responsibility lies on the shoulders of the Islamic and Arab countries not to recognize this entity, whatever the challenges may be, and all Arab countries must continue to do their utmost to regain all of the occupied territories and retain all the rights, however or however long this may take. Second of all, Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the whole world knows the sanctity of Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Al-Aqsa Mosque is very important in the Muslim religion. Even when it comes to the Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and so nobody, whoever he may be, can harm the sanctity, can be allowed to harm the sanctity of this mosque. Al-Quds also is a very important city, a very important religious city. It's a very important city for the Christian and Muslim religions, and so for this reason we must also do our best to protect this city. And the continued Israeli occupation of this holy city, in addition to the plans which are going on in Al-Quds and people being forced to flee their homes in Al-Quds, Jerusalem, and the Jewish neighborhoods being built in this city, and the settlements also being built in this city, and strengthening the chokehold on the city by building the separation wall, not to mention the American-Israeli continuous efforts to establish this city as an eternal capital of the Jewish state. All of these measures are hostile measures which are unacceptable and condemned and must be confronted. The very dangerous assaults, continued dangerous assaults on the blessed Al-Aqsa Mosque, and what is being implemented around the Al-Aqsa Mosque and under the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and the plans to destroy this mosque represent a clear danger which threatens the existence of this mosque and the preserving of this mosque, and also warns against dangerous repercussions, not just the Palestine, for the whole Islamic world. The necessity and duty to defend Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque is a religious duty and a humanitarian responsibility and a moral responsibility for any freedom-loving person in our Arab and Islamic world and any freedom-loving person in the world. We call on the Arabs and Muslims on the official level, and we call on all the people also on the public level. We call on all of you to do your utmost to liberate Al-Quds from the hands of the Zionists and to maintain and preserve the real identity of Al-Quds, to maintain its Islamic and Christian identity. The third point in this chapter, the Palestinian resistance. The Palestinian people are waging a war of self-defense, are battling a battle of self-defense, and are trying to regain their rights in Palestine. This is a historic battle. And this Palestinian resistance is a legitimate right which is recognized in all religions and in all international and human norms. This right includes resistance in all forms, and especially armed resistance in all forms which allow the Palestinian resistance factions from retaining their rights, especially in light of the imbalance of power. Of course, we know that the Israelis have the upper hand when it comes to weaponry and possess the most advanced weaponry and technology of killing. Experience has clearly shown us, ever since the beginning of this conflict between our Ummah and the Zionist entity, when this entity was established in 1948, it has been proven that the choice of resistance, of armed resistance against the Israeli military assaults, the armed resistance to liberate occupied territories and to achieve a balance in fear and fill the gap left by the upper hand of Israeli weaponry. All of this was provided by our resistance, and so this shows that the choice of resistance against Israel is the suitable choice to be made. Evidence of this is what we achieved in the resistance in Lebanon, when we were able to make consecutive victories. We achieved a lot in the battlefront. And so our jihadist struggle has shown a lot. It also forced the Israelis to withdraw from most of Lebanon's territories in May 2000. We also saw the clear evidence of the strength of resistance when Israel wasn't able to achieve its aims in the July 2006 war, when the resistance achieved a historic victory which changed the equation permanently and showed the first clear victory against this enemy and took away the old equation of Israel being an invincible army. Evidence of the strength of resistance is also manifested in the achievements of a Palestinian resistance after what we saw in the Palestinian Revolution ever since it began, and the choice of armed resistance and the revolutions which we witnessed, and the Israelis being forced to withdraw from the Gaza Strip in the year 2005. Without any conditions, this withdrawal came without any conditions, without any political advantages, without any political concessions from a Palestinian side, and this was the first geographical victory for the Palestinians, the first victory of this level, and showed the effective of the choice of resistance. It was the first Israeli withdrawal which Israel was obliged to by Palestinian resistance. And the significance of this is very, very important. It's very important even in the future struggle between us and the Zionist entity. The perseverance, the great perseverance of the Palestinians in Gaza during the war in 2008, the Israeli war on Gaza, this is all a lesson which must be learned by all generations, a lesson which must be learned by all oppressors. If this is what we have achieved in our resistance in Lebanon and Palestine, what was the achievements which were made by those who wanted to achieve a settlement? What did we achieve from our efforts to achieve a settlement? What have we gained from the efforts for a settlement? What are the results which negotiations brought about? All the agreements which were made with the Zionist entity, what were their results? Weren't their results more hegemony from the Israelis, more Israeli stubbornness, more Israeli conditions? We stress that we stand in support. We stand firmly in support of the Palestinian people and of the Palestinian cause. We stand in support of this historic geographic cause and political cause and religious cause, but we stress as well that we support this people and we support the resistance movements, the Palestinian resistance movements in the struggle against the Israeli project. The fourth point, the negotiations for settlement. Our position is and will always be towards this, and this is an ideological firm stance because it's based on a clear right. Our right was and still is and will always be concerning the agreements which were made with the Israelis. We saw what happened, of course, in negotiations with Israelis, the Oslo Agreement, the process in Madrid, the Camp David process. Our stance is that we refuse the mere proposal, the mere thought of a settlement with the Israelis, which is based upon recognizing their right to exist and also to deterring to the Israeli demands and abandoning the lands which will occupy the Israelis. This is our clear, firm stance. We refuse even the thought of negotiating with Israel because this means negotiating on our occupied lands and on our rights. Even if everyone in the whole world recognizes Israel, we refuse any negotiations, and so within this perspective we call on all of the responsible parties to reconsider the choice of negotiating with Israel and to reevaluate the results of the agreements which were signed with the Zionist enemy and to abandon any negotiations for a settlement, for achieving a settlement in the so-called peace process. because those who depended on the American administrations, the consecutive American administrations playing a role and playing a mediating honest role, those people who depended on America playing such a role are now aware that America has betrayed them and has blackmailed them and has put pressure on them, and America has shown that it is hostile to the people of the Arab world and has stood very clearly side by side with Israel, has aligned itself with Israel, with the Zionist entity, and the Zionist entity whom they imagine they can achieve peace with, the Zionist entity has shown in all different stages of negotiation that it does not want peace, does not want to achieve peace. This entity is using negotiations to impose its own conditions, to promote its stance, to achieve its interests, and to increase the enmity between the Arab people and the Israelis, and is trying to get a normalization of ties free of charge, which provides for Israel normal existence and blending in with the regional system, and allows for Israel to impose itself as a reality in the region, imposes acceptance of Israel and accepting the legality of its existence after abandoning the territories, Palestinian territories, which it occupied. And so here we call and we hope that all the Arab leaders will go back to Palestine and to Al-Quds, meaning to go back to the firms, to go back to the principles, and specify Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque as central issues which they will liberate from all these Zionist practices. We also expect from the Arab leaders and from the Arab public to do their religious and humanitarian duty towards the sanctities of Palestine, and to do their duties towards the oppressed people in Palestine, and to provide all types of support in order to enable the Palestinians to continue to stand on their own two feet, to continue to practice resistance, meaning we believe in the ability of the Palestinians to achieve victory if we provide with them the support. We also call on the Arab public and the Arab politicians to refuse any settlements and normalization of ties with Israel, and also to hold on to the right of all refugees to return to their territories and to their homes which they were forced to flee in an unrightful way. We also call on them to express outright refusal of naturalization of refugees and to immediately begin with the efforts to lift the siege which is imposed on the Palestinians, especially the siege which is imposed on Gaza, and to also sponsor a cause which concerns more than 11,000 prisoners in Israeli prisons, and to begin with working plans to liberate all of these prisoners from detention. The conclusion before the questions. This is our perspective. We were always cautious that we work for the sake of righteousness and justice. We were always cautious to show that we were on the side of righteousness and justice. And this is our stance. These are our stances. These are our positions. And in this way, we wanted to show that we were honest. We believe in righteousness. We speak for the sake of righteousness. We defend righteousness. And we sacrifice for the sake of righteousness until martyrdom. What we want, on the other hand, is just to satisfy our God. And we don't want anything else. We don't want any rewards except to satisfy our God and to satisfy our Ummah. We want them to be happy in this world and the afterworld. God, you know that those who were among us always worked for righteousness and for justice, and they worked for bringing about righteousness for all the people, and defended those who were oppressed, your believers who were oppressed, and strive to bring about justice in your region and strive to achieve your satisfaction. And for this reason our martyrs have fell, and for this reason we walk on the same path as our martyrs, and we continue with our jihad. And oh God, you have promised us either victory or to meet you after sacrificing our blood for your sake, for your cause. And our promise to you, God, is that we continue to be people who believe in your cause, people, men and women, people who wait for your promise, people who stand firm and who never change their principles. Now the questions. I'm ready for questions. Assalamu alaikum. May peace be upon you, first of all. First of all, I'm good to see you. I'm glad to see you in good health. And this is something which is very important to all of us, and thank you very much. We welcome you to Lebanese politics, to the new Lebanese politics. Today, after announcing this new political document of Hezbollah, of course, Hezbollah now has announced it belongs to the Lebanese political club. I can hear you, so you can continue. Of course, I want to call it maybe a development or a transformation or a change. I don't know what to name it exactly in the political thinking of Hezbollah, the political ideology of Hezbollah, and the fact that Hezbollah now has joined Lebanese politics or the Lebanese political club. My comment is concerning the Lebanese issue. You didn't mention Arab identity. You mentioned Arab identity in one section, but when it came to Lebanese politics, Hezbollah and the Lebanese government, you didn't mention Arab identity. So I'd like to ask about this. I'd like to ask about this issue. Why was it absent when you spoke about Hezbollah's relationship with the Lebanese state? Why didn't you speak about the Arab identity? This is just one comment I would like to make. And the second comment I have is in the same perspective or in the same context. In the economic or social agenda, this wasn't focused on a lot. I think many Lebanese believe that Hezbollah should have a big say, maybe play the leading role when it comes to the economic and social situation in Lebanon. It's very clear that Hezbollah and all its supporters, with all of its sectors, of course, Hezbollah supporters include farmers, laborers, many poor people, and they barely reach the midway concerning the wealth. They barely reach those who are generally well off, not the rich people. So Hezbollah generally is referred to as a movement which represents Lebanese or poor Lebanese people. As I said, laborers and farmers. And so we thought that there might be a complete working plan for the economic and social situation in Lebanon. So will we see an implementation? I would like to hear more explanation on this issue. The concerning your first point, we don't have any specific naming, a development or a change or a transformation. People develop, yes, developments do occur, that's natural, and the whole world has changed from 24 years until now. The world order has changed, the situation in Lebanon has changed. This is natural. Now, concerning the issue about the Arab identity, if you notice, this all came under the title of Lebanon. The issue or the chapter on Lebanon was the state, the country, the army, the resistance, and the Arab world. All of it came under the title of Lebanon. So it was very natural when we spoke about Lebanon's relations with the Arab countries. So when I referred to this, I didn't mean Lebanon was outside the Arab world or didn't have Arab identity. And today we are announcing a document. document, the political manifesto of Hezbollah, which represents our general stances, which also represents our political ideology, but concerning our working programs, our economic programs, this document does not actually contain programs or working plans. We're speaking about general lines here, generalities. The working plans will be announced in due course independently, as were announced in the election campaign of the parliamentary elections which were held in Lebanon. As you did say, all of these issues which were mentioned, a country which must have the following descriptions, all of this needs a working plan. And a working plan does not concern us only. We must agree with all our partners in the country to a working plan. Next question. Good evening.
Natalie
Issa from OTV. Another question concerning the issue of resistance. You spoke about the experience of the resistance. Nobody has any doubt about what the resistance has achieved. Now, in spite of the fact that the resistance is still a central priority, and it has a priority in the approaches and the position of Hezbollah, and because the American plot will lead to more chaos, and maybe the Palestinian scene will be the place where we'll see the next war, and maybe because when Hezbollah speaks about Palestinians, nobody has doubt in the fact that Hezbollah wants the Palestinians to return to their territories, but the document referred to the civil rights of the Palestinians in Lebanon. And the mere fact that you point out to this, it is very similar to what we hear from any Lebanese politician about civil rights for Palestinians. After 17 years of Hezbollah's experience and Hezbollah's political participation and its participation in the government and its participation in decision-making in one way or another, how can we imagine that Hezbollah will take the initiative, will take any step for the sake of transforming the slogan of giving Palestinians in Lebanon civil rights? How will you take the initiative to actually implement this step, not just propose it, but to implement it and even grant them these rights? This was mentioned in the manifesto of the previous government, but unfortunately the political instability or political tension in Lebanon prevented us from taking any steps to implement this and to grant the Palestinian any civil rights. We witnessed tension in the country, and all of the focus was on stopping the tension, easing the tension in the country. The current government, which represents a unity government or a government of national consensus, of course, this article of Palestinians' rights in Lebanon, the rights of Palestinian refugees, is mentioned in the cabinet manifesto, and we sense from the Prime Minister Saad Hariri that he is serious in dealing with this issue, and we will do our best. In the end, this depends on continuous efforts. We must continue to monitor and this issue to continue to monitor it in the institutions and the governmental institutions. So we and the rest of the politicians, we will continue to monitor and to do our best to actually implement this step, to grant the Palestinians their civil rights in a way which also maintains and preserves their cause, because a proposal is always made, giving Palestinian civil rights and social rights will lead in the end to neutralizing the refugees. But this should not be the case. We must not say we have two choices, to keep them living in dire living conditions or to give them rights and make them or neutralize them. No, there is a midway solution, to give them social civil rights, which does not lead to their neutralization, but in the same way provides them a right to return. But this needs continuous efforts, not talk, but more action. Once again, I question Natalie Issa, OTV, and my question is concerning the this difference between democratic consensus and real democracy, which depends on abolishing political sectarianism. In your point of view, what is the appropriate way to abolish political sectarianism without witnessing any problems in Lebanon, especially because many Lebanese depend on the principle of sectarianism and have gotten used to this confessional system or sectarian system? How will we prevent any problems if we try to abolish political sectarianism? Let's be realistic. Abolishing political sectarianism is one of the most difficult things to do. And unfortunately, many of those who call for abolishing political sectarianism are not serious in these demands. They just make political demands just to say that they are civilians and they are open and they are making these modern demands, because the current sectarian system is a tribal system, which is very old, a centuries old system. Let's forget what is being said. In reality, abolishing this system is very difficult, and so now nobody can say in one or two sentences how can we abolish this sectarian system without witnessing problems. Anyway, the demand or the call made by the Parliament Speaker Nabih Birri to form a national committee to abolish political sectarianism, which provokes some people, but they shouldn't have been provoked, because when we speak about putting together a national committee to abolish this system, this means we are putting together a committee. It does not mean we are cancelling out or abolishing this system. This committee might take 10, 20 years to do its job. Nobody can come and sit down and say, this is the way we can solve this problem. We must sit down together and be very frank. We must express our fears and our reservations, and we must also raise our guarantees. How do we abolish this system? Maybe after a long dialogue, maybe after long deliberations between Lebanese politicians, between different Lebanese sectarian groups, maybe after meetings with civilian institutions, maybe after that we could reach the result whereby we cannot even abolish this system. So in that way we would have made the attempt, but we would have also known that this was impossible. But at least we would have tried, of course. We would say then that we reached the result and we weren't able to achieve this. We weren't able to abolish the system of sectarianism. Let's continue with this political system, but let's develop this system. Let's make amendments. So I believe that the natural step which must be taken in order to achieve this aim is to put together a higher national committee or higher national council, which can hold deliberations in a calm manner, in a non-hasty manner, to address this issue. Next question. The talk about resistance, the talk about Lebanese resistance and the role of the Lebanese resistance in supporting these resistance and depending on the resistance as a strategic choice, this is being met in Lebanon by some Lebanese people. This is being met by a disagreement over the resistance. Some Lebanese have expressed reservations towards the resistance. How do we address this? Yes, there is a disagreement about the resistance, that's true, and we understand this disagreement. Irrespective of the motives of this disagreement and the real reasons behind this disagreement, I always said that we do not allege, and we never said that we have unity or we have support from all Lebanese. I said in many different occasions that no resistance throughout history had support of all sectors, of all factions of the country. When it comes to resistance, we have people who support, people who are against, and people who are neutral. And throughout history of occupation, we have people who resist the occupation, people who collaborate with the occupation, and people who are neutral, who just are silent. Even concerning occupation, people, of course, were opposed to this occupation, and people expressed this opposition by armed resistance. This is very natural. Why here in Lebanon? There are many strange issues in Lebanon, but why is it so strange to say that this is a point of disagreement? It's not strange to Lebanon, just like any other country. resistance is not a subject of total Lebanese unity, and that's no problem as long as we understand each other and as long as we hold dialogue. I would also like to say that political consensus or general support of resistance is a condition for completion of resistance, not a condition for existence of resistance, meaning that throughout history, resistance was a subject of disagreement, and if one group made a decision to fight occupation, this group can form itself and fight resistance without having complete support. Yes, if it had complete support, this is better. This will enable us to achieve victory quickly in a more rapid way. But this is not a condition for our existence. Complete Lebanese support is not a condition for our continuous existence. We would like to have complete support. We would like to have complete consensus. No, of course, we really do want, we are not against it, because this is something which completes the resistance. But I believe even in the committee which was assigned with the task of the cabinet manifesto, during those discussions we saw cooperation between the different Lebanese politicians. We do not come and say we have an enemy in Lebanon. We don't have any internal Lebanese enemies. There are no Lebanese enemies. We are ready to cooperate, collaborate with everyone to make this government a success, irrespective of the reservations of some politicians towards the provision concerning the resistance. This is a provision of disagreement, but there are many other provisions of agreement. Let's cooperate on what we agree upon, and let's continue with dialogue on what we disagree on. Next question. Nada Ta'aziz from LBC. This new political document concerning the central role of the resistance and about the strategy of defense, in this way, have you decided the strategy of defense, and is there no more need to discuss the strategy of defense on the table of national dialogue, and does this mean that the decisions of war and peace are in the hands of the resistance? What I said today is not new concerning the resistance. A type of cooperation. I mentioned the term a type of cooperation. This needs more discussions between the Lebanese army, of course, and the popular resistance.
Well, as you see, that's Sheikh Hassan Nasrullah, Hezbollah Secretary General. He's answering the media questions now. Let me bring you a gist of what he said. He started with mentioning parts of the Lebanese Hezbollah manifesto, in which he said Lebanon belongs to all Lebanese and it must be unified in all ways. It must be a powerful country without any federalism in it. He also said that the imbalance of power between Israel and Lebanon requires a popular resistance to defend the nation against enemy invasion. That's why Hezbollah's presence is felt necessary in Lebanon. He called for participation of all the Lebanese groups and factions to repel enemy threats. Nasrullah said that Lebanon must provide social liberties, have a strong army to protect the people. They should have a modern electoral law. It's required to bring about comprehensive representations for the diverse ethnicities living there. Nasrullah said that Lebanon needs to provide services for people of all walks of life, not only certain groups of people. They need to provide free education for everyone, not only for certain strata of society. Women need to be given a greater role. Brain drain needs to be stopped. Palestinians in Lebanon, who are living as temporary guests, in his words, need to be given due attention. Their problems need to be addressed, but it does not it will not necessarily lead to their naturalization. That's what he said while answering the questions from media. He also stressed the rights of refugees to return must not be put into oblivion. Difference of opinion between Arabs must be removed within dialogues. Good relations between Syria and Lebanon must continue. Differences between Islamic sects must be removed. He stressed that Europeans are taking the U.S. side, which is a strategic mistake, in his words. He said that Europe is morally responsible to differentiate between terrorists and resistance fighters, and they must adopt an independent stance. He appreciated the stance of Latin American states against colonialism. He also called for liberation of Al-Quds from the Zionist occupation, and he said the idea of Israeli settlement is refused, so is the idea of negotiations with Israeli occupiers. He said that the U.S. wants normalization of ties with Israel, free of charge. Nasrullah then started replying to media questions, which, as you can see, it's